This is Andy Shore from Washington, D.C. with a pulmonary and critical care literature update. I'd like to point out an article that was in the January 16th issue of JAMA by Regener and colleagues that looks at issues of nutrition in the ICU and the risk for ventilator-associated pneumonia. Nutrition is a key determinant of outcome in critically ill patients, and a number of studies have recently shown that how we manage nutrition has important impacts on a number of issues related to length of stay, recovery, rehabilitation, and what have you. The general standard of care is to try to feed patients early, and often we feed them through an oral gastric tube or a nasogastric tube, and if we measure high residuals, we generally stop the feeding. It used to be that our target for residuals is we tolerate a residual of 200 cc's in every 6 hours, but a number of studies have suggested that higher residuals are actually as well tolerated as lower residuals when it comes to risk for aspiration. The theory driving our focus on residuals is that high gastric residuals predispose the patient to the risk for ventilator-associated pneumonia in terms of what it does to changing gut colonization and affecting the aerodigestive tract, and also in terms of what it does to microaspiration around the cuff. But again, those theories are really not based on well-done human studies, and the relationship between residuals and the risk for VAP has never been really well elucidated. Also realize that the way we measure residuals is somewhat arbitrary. It's very dependent on where the tube is, the size of the tube, the effort that's made to measure the residual, and so it's not even consistent from person to person in the same patient at the same time. Therefore, because of our need to really focus on nutrition, this group of investigators in France at 9 ICUs randomized approximately 450 patients to having their residuals measured every several hours to never having their residuals measured at all. In that arm, it was just focus on nutrition, drive ahead. If a patient vomits grossly, you can stop things. In the other arm, in the traditional arm, it was kind of our current standard of care, measure the residuals. If they're high, hold, consider adding prokinetic agents. The primary endpoint for this trial was ventilator-associated pneumonia. Secondary endpoints were not only mortality, but actually the calorie debt, or how successful feeding was. When they looked at the group of patients, I think it's important to realize that VAP was a very well-defined endpoint. In a number of studies that have looked at VAP as an endpoint, whether they're prevention trials or trials of tracheostomy timing, VAP really hasn't been well-defined. VAP has been defined based on purely clinical grounds, or VAP's been described basically purely on a clinical pulmonary infection score. And that's not a perfect test. In this study, these authors had lower airway cultures as the guiding tool to determine if the patient actually had a pneumonia. Now, of course, they may not be the best gold standard out there, but I think most people would agree that if you have 10 to the third pseudomonads growing in your lower airway and you have an infiltrate, we're going to call that pneumonia. In addition, because of course the trial couldn't be blinded in terms of whether the patient was having their residuals measured or not, they had this primary endpoint of ventilator-associated pneumonia adjudicated by a blinded committee. And so that blinded committee looked at the results of lower airway cultures, but they also looked at a number of other clinical features, and again, they did it in a fashion to which they were blinded as to whether the patient was having residuals measured or not. In terms of this primary endpoint, in this group of relatively critically ill patients who all had had about 7 days of mechanical ventilation, what they saw was that the rates of VAP were about 16% in each arm. So first of all, the rates of VAP were higher than what we might anticipate in the United States, but consistent with what we see in trials reported from Europe. But more importantly, there was no difference in rates of VAP between the two arms. So whether the patient had their residuals measured and had the feeding stopped if the residuals were high, or whether they just ignored the issue of residuals, fed them, only held it if they grossly vomited, and then moved on, there was no difference in rates of ventilator-associated pneumonia. In addition, the patients in whom residuals were not measured were more likely to have a lower calorie debt, have more calories given over the course of the study, than the patients who were having their residuals measured. So measuring residuals and acting based on that measurement of residuals failed to prevent VAP and actually potentially injured the patient by holding up their ability to get to their nutrition target. A classic example of where we thought we knew the right answer in critical care, and when we actually studied it, we realized that we were actually wrong. Now, I think it's important to realize in this trial who they excluded. They excluded patients mainly with abdominal surgery because they're measuring the residual serves another purpose other than just preventing VAP. It's really assessing organ recovery. And as I said, the trial isn't blinded, although the assessment of the endpoint was blinded. Nonetheless, this is another trial that really focuses on attrition in the ICUs, shows that some of our commonly held beliefs are incorrect, and suggests that with an alternate paradigm and change in practice, we can potentially improve outcomes for ventilated patients without compromising or jeopardizing their risk or increasing their risk for pneumonia. Again, the January 16th issue of JAMA. This is Andy Shore from Washington, D.C.